Welcome to the University of Nottingham podcast.
In this podcast, an in-depth look at the violence which has erupted between Georgia and Russian forces over South Ossetia. Expert on conflict, Professor Stefan Wolf looks at what's likely to happen next.
And the West will clearly not live up to any hopes that Georgia might have had in terms of getting the Americans on side against Russia. It's just not going to happen.
What's needed?
This is a real danger, and it really requires the international community to take swift and effective action.
And the impact it's likely to have on relationships with Russia.
Other EU member states that have always cautioned against too friendly a relationship with Russia now see some of their worst fears confirmed.
How serious is the situation? We're obviously seeing a lot of it on the news at the moment, but how dire is it over there?
Well, I think it's been a little bit better over the past day or so now that Georgian forces have withdrawn from South Ossetia. On the other hand, the very fact that Russia's military offensive continues makes one wonder at the moment where Russia will actually stop and what it is that Russia requires from Georgia to stop the offensive against other military targets in Georgia, but also against some of the Black Sea ports, for example, a threatened blockade of Georgia on the Black Sea. So there are still a couple of issues that could potentially lead to further escalation of the conflict. Also, if we think of the opening of a so-called second front now in the other separatist province in Abkhazia.
How did we get to this point? I know it's not a cut and dried, simple explanation, and historically it goes back quite a few years. But more recently, from 2004, it's always an unresolved issue, wasn't it?
Yes, it has been an unresolved issue for quite some time. And if we don't want to go all the way back to the creation of the Soviet Union in the 1920s, then at least from sort of 1989, 1990 onwards, in the dying days of the Soviet Union, nationalism in particular on the Georgian side increased quite a lot. And that was something by which Ossetians felt quite threatened in their cultural identity and the degree of autonomy that they had within the Soviet Union. So they were not too keen on being part of a new independent Georgian nation state. Before the war, they were backed by Russia, but a ceasefire was agreed in 1992, and then finally an agreement signed 2 years later, mediated by the OSCE, which established fairly clear areas of control, ceasefire lines, exclusion zones for heavy weaponry and arms and so on. And this really remained pretty much a frozen conflict, as it was called at the time, for roughly 10 years. Until Mikhail Saakashvili, the current Georgian president, came to power. And he really, part of his political program was the idea that he would reunite the Georgian state, establish full sovereignty, full control of Tbilisi over all the separatist regions. Now, from 2004 onwards, rhetoric has been quite high, and there have been increasing tensions between Georgia and Russia. Georgia blaming Russia for most of its ills, in particular in relation to separatism, but also the local insurgents in South Ossetia and Abkhazia, sort of using the backing of Russia, tried to needle the Georgian authorities quite a lot. So over the past couple of years, we have already seen sort of regular exchanges of fire and violations of the ceasefire. But it was only really over the past 2 or 3 months that the situation began to escalate quite heavily. And then last Friday, the Georgian army was ordered, for yet unclear reasons, to try to retake the entire territory of South Ossetia by force, which then sparked fairly disproportionate reaction of Russia, one can say now.
I mean, Russia at the moment is, and I suppose if you go back to Kosovo, it was certainly NATO's reason for entering the territories was that the protection of life was more important at that point than the preservation of any kind of sovereignty. Now, Russia is claiming that at the moment, but they're referring to South Ossetia, but there are actually a number of the attacks have actually been quite close to Tbilisi. So the view that Russia is being overtly aggressive, the fact that they are striking so close to the Georgian capital, is that a justified view?
That's true. I mean, there are always different sides to every story. I mean, the Georgian story is that they are completely within their rights to establish control over what is part of their territory. On the other hand, the Russians are also not wrong in saying that, well, there has been an agreement that goes back to the mid-1990s, which has so far been honored by both Russia and Georgia. So the Georgians are clearly in violation of this ceasefire agreement. As far as sort of the protection of human life goes, again, I don't think that Russia is entirely wrong here in saying that the Georgian offensive has caused quite significant loss of human life, and the few pictures of the South Ossetian capital of Svanvali that we have seen clearly suggest that there has been quite massive destruction. And Russia also has a claim here to say that there are peacekeeping forces in the region. By Friday, before the escalation began, there was about 500 or so fairly lightly armed, predominantly Russian peacekeepers. And a lot of the people living in the area do have Russian passports. So I think from that perspective, Russia does have a point that it is defending civilian life against a Georgian aggression, as the Russians would put it. On the other hand, when I said earlier that the response by Russia was quite disproportionate, I think that mostly refers to the fact that Russia has threatened now a blockade of the Georgian ports on the Black Sea, which would be clearly in violation of international law. There have been attacks by aircraft, by Russian aircraft, on Georgian civilian installations on the Black Sea. The bombing of military fields near Tbilisi, I think that to some extent could be justified as purely part of military tactics, trying to prevent Georgian fighter aircraft to intervene again in South Ossetia. But the sheer scale of the Russian response and the deployment of quite significant numbers of ground troops and aircraft to South Ossetia, I think that goes a little bit beyond what would have been necessary to force a withdrawal of Georgian troops beyond the established ceasefire lines.
There's a tremendous potential here for destabilization of that region, and I use that term loosely because it is quite a volatile situation normally. How likely is it that we will see this escalate into some kind of truly international incident? Because, I mean, if you weigh up Georgia and Russia's military might, you're talking, for example, combat aircraft Russia have over 1,200. Georgia have 7. Just to put that in context, how likely is it that this will spark further conflict, possibly bring in an international community?
I think, first of all, the Georgian military, even after several years of an American-sponsored train and equip program, is clearly no match for the Russian military. I mean, both in terms of size as well as in terms of the equipment that they have, the training, also the experience that Russians have had just across the border in Chechnya, for example. So this is nothing really that Georgia can match. On the other hand, I also don't really see any major involvement of Western powers, NATO, in a combat mission there. What we might see, one of the proposals that have been put forward is the establishment of a more neutral peacekeeping force. So far, it's been the Commonwealth of Independent States, which basically means Russian troops acting as so-called peacekeepers. There might be an option that EU troops in one shape or another would be deployed to the region just to provide a buffer between the two military factions. The other problem, of course, is wider escalation in the region. I mean, we have already seen in Georgia over the past 2 days that rebels in Abkhazia have attacked Georgian forces in the upper part of the so-called Kodori Gorge, which is of quite significant strategic significance to both Georgia as well as Russia. Georgia, on the one hand, this is the last military foothold that it has in the separatist region of Abkhazia. The few Georgians that still live in this area basically live under the protection of the Georgian military. On the other hand, the Kodori Gorge throughout the 1990s had been alleged by Russia to be a safe haven for rebels fighting in Chechnya, providing training camps, but also providing sort of relatively easy access for, in particular, Islamist fighters that were coming from other parts of Asia to join the Chechen insurgency against Russia. So from this perspective, there's clearly a danger here that there might be more land grab, if you will, from the Russian side, from its allies against Georgia. And Georgia might lose permanently control of not just South Ossetia, but also Abkhazia. The other important dimension that we mustn't forget about is that Georgia is really important in terms of energy transport routes, in particular from the Caspian. It is the major way in which Azerbaijan can get some of its oil to the world market. And we have about 1 million barrels a day going through the pipelines in Georgia. So obviously, if this was cut off, it would have a major impact also on the Azerbaijani economy. And then we have to see that Azerbaijan, of course, is involved in its own post-Soviet conflict with Armenia over the Nagorno-Karabakh territory. So from this perspective, I think there's quite a lot of potential that the entire South Caucasus region again could become very, very unstable, much like it was a decade and a half ago, just after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So this is a real danger, and it really requires the international community to take swift and effective action to bring an end to the fighting, prevent escalation, and then really look for a long-term solution in the region as a whole.
In terms of the Caucasus themselves, the recent independence of Kosovo, I mean, we spoke about that not too long ago, how much of a bearing would that have had on neighbouring regions sort of looking at Kosovo and saying, well, you know, they've done it, why can't we?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there was always an argument that the Russians made, and a lot of analysts supported that independence of Kosovo would sort of invigorate the hopes that other separatist regions have, that they can now rely on the precedent, so to speak, that Kosovo set and push more strongly for independence. I think in the case of Georgia, we also have to consider Georgia's aspirations to join NATO, which have always been viewed with very great hostility by Russia, because it really doesn't want to have any other former states of the republics of the Soviet Union join NATO, come too close to Russia's borders. So for Russia, the two conflicts in South Ossetia and Abkhazia were always a good means to keep NATO out of Georgia. So from this perspective, there's a very clear set of factors, Kosovo being one of them, NATO being another one, that really have driven us towards this point of confrontation that we have at the moment. And on top of that, I think there has been a very grave miscalculation by the president of Georgia, thinking that what looked like some sort of a security guarantee offered by NATO at the Bucharest summit in April, saying that eventually Georgia would be invited to join NATO, would actually take effect in the case of the kind of military confrontation that we have between Georgia and Russia now. And that clearly has not been the case, but the West also needs to ask itself whether it should make, even in such vague terms, gift guarantees to countries like Georgia, which then prompt sort of a kind of action that in the end can spiral out of control, and the West will clearly not live up to any hopes that Georgia might have had in terms of getting the Americans on side against Russia. It's just not going to happen.
What would you expect to see? And in terms of relationships between, say, for example, Britain and Russia, I mean, that's not an entirely healthy relationship as it is. What are the broader implications?
Well, let's start with the possible scenarios. I think most likely at the moment is that we will see a cessation of violence over the next couple of days once Russia has firmly established a foothold, military foothold, has enough ground troops there, has made it very clear to Georgia that this is an unwinnable war for them. There will be some sort of ceasefire, probably mediated by outsiders, most likely the European Union. Bernard Kouchner, the representative of the French presidency, is in Tbilisi today, might go to Moscow afterwards. There's an EU foreign ministers meeting, emergency session called for Wednesday. So we might actually see some concrete proposals put on the table then, a new ceasefire agreement being established. Obviously, the relationship between the EU and Russia has been quite frosty over the past couple of months already. In particular, sort of British-Russian relations have not been anywhere near anything cordial for months now, and tit for tat expulsions of diplomats, British consul officials, and so on and so forth, or the alleged killing of a former Russian FSB officer in London. All of these things have clearly not contributed to the situation, and so it is very difficult to see how any of what is going on right now can improve that. I think in the longer term, Russia is too important a strategic partner for everybody in Europe that we will really see anything like a new Cold War or some of the horror scenarios that that have been painted. But I think it will be much more difficult for those states of the European Union that feel traditionally much closer to Russia, in particular Germany, to some extent France, to really push ahead now with a new EU-Russia agreement that might be put on ice for the time being. In particular because a lot of other EU member states that have always cautioned against too friendly a relationship with Russia now see some of their worst fears confirmed. And this is not only new member states that joined in 2004-2007 who themselves had the experience of Russian domination or Soviet domination during the Cold War, but it's also quite a number of the so-called old EU member states that are deeply suspicious of Russian ambitions on the international stage. The final point that I want to make, however, is that the strategic importance of Russia in particular in relation to energy also makes it very clear that in the long term both sides have to come to an agreement. Russia needs Europe as a market, and Europe needs Russia as a supplier of energy. So there are interests that go beyond what in a couple of years' time we might only see as a minor hiccup in Russian-EU relations. But for the moment it is quite serious, and it will delay negotiations on the EU-Russia treaty, and it might cause some serious sort of upset in the relationship between Russia and the West more generally.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the University of Nottingham podcast. Some of the music in the show has been provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. That's music.podshow.com. If you have any comments on this or any other University of Nottingham podcast, email me on andrew.burden@nottingham.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.